pull-up jump shot. It's good. Zach Randolph does it again. Three-point game. They've got to go for three now. No choice. Conley for three. Ties it up.
First team all defense. First team all defense.
Here's Gasol from outside. Tony Allen. Shot clock at four. Randolph puts it up. Puts it in.
You are Locked On Grizzlies, your daily Memphis Grizzlies podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.
Welcome into the Thursday edition of the show today. Again, if you're not already subscribed to the show, make sure you go and do so. Whatever, wherever you get your podcast from, just it's available on every platform. Make sure you go subscribe to Locked On Grizzlies so you don't miss an episode. But it's been a few weeks, but we now have David Kopp, Commercial Appeal, talking with us on Locked On Grizzlies. We didn't speak last week because it was Halloween, and my wife decided that it was better for me to spend time with our family than to talk to you on the phone, David. Which, to be fair, I'm still debating on which was better. I'm not sure.
What kind of candy did you get?
I take a certain amount of parent tax, you know, every year. It seems to get higher. We raise taxes in our house usually every year. But you know, it's okay. Not great. But like in our house, like the candy just sits around, like the kids don't eat it all. We find it like in January in like some bag, it gets thrown away. Just, oh well, I should probably just give out people like pencils and stuff, useful stuff. Like maybe
that's a terrible idea. I do agree with the idea of the parent tax on Halloween, though, because as your kids get older and your trick-or-treating excursions go farther and farther from the house, it's more work for you, more candy. So it only makes sense, right, that you should get a bigger cut.
Absolutely. There was one house, though, that was giving up full-size Hershey bars. So shout out to the house in Collierville in my neighborhood giving out full-size Hershey bars. That was dope. That's solid. That takes a lot of effort. Like, that's expensive too. Like, I don't even give out candy to our house. Like, we just leave. We don't even get out any candy. We used to do the whole bowl in a bowl out, like in the front porch thing when we left, but it just gets gone. Like, there's some little kid that hates everybody.
Some kid just comes up and takes the entire bowl for himself. Yeah.
Exactly. And it's like, you know, we question parenting at that point. But anyway, enough about Halloween and my kids. The Grizzlies got another win last night. Rare win. It was impressive the fact that they actually made some shots. They didn't shoot 3 for 25. They didn't play five bigs
simultaneously
against Karl-Anthony Towns. But what were your thoughts on the game last night?
Yeah, I mean, it was perfectly fitting, right, that I had an article coming out in Thursday's paper about how the front office constructed a roster that can't shoot three-pointers to play a style that's predicated on shooting three-pointers. And they go out there and hit a ton of them, it was a rewarding of Taylor Jenkins' faith in the system. You know, he sounded – I mean, you could have rightly said that he sounded insane after the Rockets game when asked about their 12% three-point shooting against Houston, a team that is allowing more opponent three-point makes, or at least a higher percentage of three-pointers to opponents than any other team in the NBA. And his response was, "We need to shoot more." I had to restrain my laughter, not because I just thought he was wrong or anything. I didn't necessarily think that. It just sounded crazy. It sounds crazy to, you know, keep shooting when you're shooting so poorly and to even shoot more. But that's the approach that they took. Credit to Dylan Brooks for having literally no fear whatsoever. That guy is going to pull the trigger when he's open. So will Jay Crowder. They were both on. And that really, I thought, set the tone for them. And it kind of shows you what they can be, albeit they were playing a Minnesota team that was shorthanded at point guard, a Minnesota team that I think will really struggle to stay in contention for a playoff spot. But a great win for the Grizzlies. Any win this season for the Grizzlies is going to be a great win.
Yeah, I think you tweeted that whenever that he said that on Sunday, and I was just I said the same thing. I quote tweeted, and I was like, I don't know if this is their – this seems crazy. Like, this seems crazy that would be your response. But yeah, credit to Dylan Brooks and Jay Crowder. They're going to shoot the ball no matter what. I mean, they're going to continue to shoot. The problem is with those guys, and I did a radio spot earlier in the day today with Greg and Eli, and that's been the same thing. But it's the problem with those guys is, you know, it's a roller coaster. You know, like, they're just not that consistent enough to where you can get that every single night from them. Like, there might be nights where you get this from Dylan Brooks or Jay Crowder or whatever, but it's just not going to be every single night. So how do they overcome those nights when they're not on, or does it matter?
Yeah, I mean, you would hope they'd have enough shooters on the roster to where if Jay or Dylan or both are off, that they could recoup that somewhere else. But the truth is, I just don't know that they do. I mean, right, in theory, Grayson Allen and Marco Guterich, you know, can fill it up in the 30-40% range. You know, in theory, Jaren Jackson Jr. is going to get 5 3-pointers at least, you know, per night up. Those things are very much not happening right now. So it's going to be a situation. It already has been a situation. It was the situation against Houston where their offense becomes very much just fast break oriented and sort of, I don't know exactly how you say it, but you look at what Brandon Clark can do, you look at what Kyle Anderson can do, you look at what Jonas can do and how Ja can create, and even, heck, Solomon Hill is showing some pretty decent offense in the mid-range type of area. So there's a lot of nights where it's not going to look exactly like Taylor Jenkins wants because they don't have the shooters to make it look like that, but he said after the Houston loss that he'll take 66 paint points every night. And, you know, to an extent, that might sound like him backing away from the core principles of pace and space, but the personnel is such that, you know, they can still score even if the threes aren't falling. They scored 100 points against Houston, making 3 3-pointers. So that's a product of the pace that they're playing. And I think as long as they're playing the pace that Jenkins wants, he's going to live with them making or missing 3-pointers because, I mean, that's just the way it's going to be with this team. There's not going to be – you're not going to hit 12 to 15 every night. And, you know, they can still score to a decent extent without that.
It is tantalizing to know that the offense that is running, like you mentioned, is still working to a point. Like, it's not that it's not working when they're losing the games. It's still working to a point. It's just that, like you mentioned, like, it's just not enough shooting. But if they were able to, and we talked about this on the show a couple weeks ago about particularly, you know, trading for a wing, if they're able to get a wing that could consistently shoot the basketball and make plays, I mean, that's a scary thought. I mean,
that's kind of the history of the Grizzlies, isn't it?
Well, that's true. We've been looking for a wing that can score for 10 years.
Yeah, no joke. But you're right. Yeah, it would be great. But I think, you know, my biggest takeaway from all of this is, all right, it doesn't matter, you know, if they win 33 or 23 this year, or 13 for that matter, which at times early in the season has also looked possible. It's how does John Morant look? How does Jaren Jackson Jr. look? And the best thing that Jaren Jackson Jr. has going for him right now is how freaking good John Morant is, because we see the chatter about Jaren among the diehards on social media, and we hear it on the radio. But the national narrative around these Grizzlies right now isn't that Jaren Jackson Jr. might be having a sophomore slump. It's how freaking good Ja Morant is. Yeah. And that's the best thing going for the Grizzlies right now, and the best thing going for Jaren Jackson Jr. Because the fact is, they're not trying to compete for a playoff spot, and they haven't, you know, completely put this onus on Jaren yet to be a star. He doesn't need to be. And so, boy, there are no better circumstances than these in which to have a sophomore slump for Jaren Jackson Jr. And John Morant gets a lot of the credit for that, because he's going to deflect some of that negative attention that Jaren would otherwise be getting.
I think you're absolutely right. Let's take a quick break. We're going to talk more about Jaren, more about Ja, in the next segment with David Cobb from The Commercial Appeal. So stay tuned. If you're the kind of guy who likes to bet a little to win a lot, try a parlay. For instance, if you liked a couple of the big favorites this week, parlays are perfect because they let you bet multiple games together for a much bigger payout. Either way, if you're going to get bet this season, do the smart thing and go to mybookie.ag, because no one gives you more ways to win. And if you join right now, MyBookie will double your first deposit. Use promo code LOCKEDONNBA to activate the offer. That's promo code LOCKEDONNBA to double your cash. Just visit mybookie.ag today. You play, you win, you get paid. Welcome back to the show. Talking with David Cobb from The Commercial Appeal. If you're not already following him on Twitter and reading his stuff over there, make sure you do so. It's a good read every day. But let's talk about Ja Morant a little bit. Like you mentioned, he is so good. I'll wait, but first, but I'll tell you what I think the most impressive thing him, the way I'm most impressed with him so far. But I want to know what impresses you the most about Ja Morant. There's any singular thing that you can take away from him this early in the season being this good. What impresses you the most?
Probably the creativity of the finishes. There seems to have been a large leap from games that from the preseason and regular season games 1 and 2 to what we've seen out of him in the last 5. And in the preseason, he was a little bit timid, or I guess more conservative in his attacking. And then in games 1 and 2, I think he was as well. If you remember, it was just less than 2 weeks ago that Coby White looked like a better player, at least in that one game, you know, tiny sample size. But since, you know, Ja Morant has absolutely shown a diverse array of scoring tricks. I mean, the floater, the up and under reverse, grabbing his, doing a Z-bang, that's in his arsenal too. Obviously, he's dunked some. Obviously, he's failed on some dunk attempts and made us all sort of, you know, catch our collective breath.
Collectively gasp.
Yeah, and, you know, and then he's hit the floater, he's hit the mid-range shot, he's hit the three-pointer. So he scored at all three levels. That's something I wasn't sure he was going to be able to do out of the gate. And I guess that's the thing that probably sticks out.
So, see, the thing I said, I asked the same question, and I said his fourth quarter scoring, like when crunch time, like the ability to know you're the guy and to go and get it done, like that's something that, like, he's always going to be asked to do. Like, that was the most impressive thing to me so far, just because, you know, getting that mindset early on, and I think that's something that Jaren can learn a lot from. Like, Jaren, I think at times doesn't think like that, doesn't go at the person that he's right in front of him, that he, you know, like, he should know he's better than everybody on the perimeter and just go straight to the basket. That's something that I think, you know, Ja's done incredibly well so far, and that's what's impressed me most. But like you said, the finishes, everything that he's done has been mostly fantastic. I know it's crazy to talk like that about a guy 7 games in, but it really is just, there really is no, I mean, there's been some downs, yes, but I mean, it's been mostly great. You mentioned he's, you know, sophomore slump. Obviously a lot of chatter last night, like you mentioned, before the break, that, you know, people talk about Jaren. He's going to be fine. But what do you think, do you take any stock into the foul situation? I mean, I did a whole segment on it last week about his fouls. Even talked a little bit about today, but what do you take away from his situation of fouling? Does it worry you? Do you care? Where are you laying on that?
No, I mean, the problem with it is not that I think it'll be an issue in 4 years that is going to keep the Grizzlies from competing, you know, for Western Conference glory. I don't think that it's necessarily that. I think that it's a problem because, one, it hinders the amount of time that he's going to be able to spend on the floor. It already has throughout this season. And Two, it frustrates him. And when he gets frustrated, he kind of wears it, his frustration, I think, a little more than, I mean, I think, you know, maybe, you know, Dylan Brooks can get a little frustrated sometimes, but it seems to kind of bother Jaren because he knows he's smart. He knows, and the fouls are sort of silly sometimes, and almost sort of like, I guess, maybe inadvertent. I mean, obviously, it's rare that, you know, it happens sometimes where you want to foul a guy and you take a smart foul. Sure. So, you know, that's rare, but it happens. But with Jaren, it's like inadvertent, but also just like pointless, a lot of the fouls. And I think he gets frustrated by that, and I think it affects his game. So, yes, that's a concern for those reasons, is that it frustrates him, it bothers him, and I think it affects his play, and then also it affects the amount of time that he can spend on the court in a season where his development is one of the top priorities. So I don't think that Jaren Jackson Jr.'s foul trouble is what is anything to be concerned about long term. I just think that in the short term, it's frustrating for those reasons because it frustrates him and it limits the amount of time that he can spend on the court developing.
Yeah, I think that that's a pretty good description of it. And I think I mentioned the fact that it almost like the fouls seem like they're coming from just not knowing where you're maybe at or maybe what's, you know, the kind of time and score. Like, it's a lot of little stuff. Like, just, you know, after a person gets by you, kind of reaching in, like, does that seem right to you? I mean, like, he's just a lot of...
Yeah, it's like, it's reflexive or immature. It's the sort of thing where, like, he knows immediately that, like, oh, that was stupid. Like, why did I do that? Like, right. You know, and then there's, like, little times where, like, somebody will, like, trip on him or, you know, he's just flails a little bit too much. And these are things that will get corrected as he grows stronger, as he gets more confident. And, you know, maybe they sort of need to alleviate some pressure from him, maybe bring him off the bench for a little bit. I mean, he came off the bench to begin last year and obviously played so well doing that he quickly became the starter when Michael Green left the lineup. You know, maybe you just send him back to the bench, let Brandon Clark play with the starters, and then let Jaren sort of be the focal point of the second unit. I mean, there's a number of things with 70-plus games to go in this season that they can do to sort of remedy this, to try and help him get out of it. And one thing that I really think they need to do, this is not on Jaren, this is on Jaren's teammates, is when he steals early in the shot clock, get him the basketball. I mean, there's been a number of instances over the last few games where, you know, he's got pretty good position on the block, and there's nothing really hindering an entry pass from going in inside to Jaren. We know that's where he does his best work. And for whatever reason, it feels like the Grizzlies aren't prioritizing that. And so, you know, the best way to get a guy going is to get him some easy looks at the rim, see the ball go in a few times, and all of a sudden, you know, it kind of sets the tone for the rest of the night. And I think there's some opportunities to do that the Grizzlies have missed out on.
Yeah, his fouls seem less, you know, like defensively out of position or, you know, going to the rim and getting in traffic. It seems less like that and more mental, if that makes, you know, if that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, it does, yeah.
And I think that's easy something that you can overcome, but I think it's just something you overcome with time and experience. And I don't know if it's overcome, you know what I mean? I don't know if that's something that changed the way you play. I think it's just overcome with time and experience and being on the court and kind of knowing where everything's at. Let's take one more quick break. We'll come back and we'll finish up with David Cobb from the Commercial Appeal. Welcome back to the show. We're talking with David Cobb, beat writer for the Commercial Appeal. I want to finish up with Brandon Clark, a guy that has been really, really good this season. I mean, him and Ja have been obviously the bright spots for this team. But a guy that's doing a lot of these that he's doing in very, very, very short minutes, like 22 minutes last night, just really impressive. But the first thing I'll ask you, you're obviously around the team a lot more than I am. I think he's on minutes restriction, but is his back, or are they just trying to be careful with him, or do you think he'll continue to get more minutes? Where are they?
He's got a lingering soreness. So, I mean, what we've seen is that no matter who it is we're talking about, unless it's Jay Crowder, essentially, you're not going to see guys go well over 30 minutes. I mean, Jay Crowder played, I think, 34 the other night. So I really don't know that anybody is going to creep up, you know, into the mid or upper 30s on a regular basis. So with Brandon, yeah, he's got a little bit of just kind of lingering soreness. And the staff and this front office have shown that they're going to be abundantly cautious anytime there's something remotely wrong with the guy physically at this point. So, he's going to continue to get up there closer to 30. There's no way that they can keep him off the floor. But I think he's going to kind of probably end up being a little bit like Ja. And, you know, maybe it's 27 minutes right. When the way he's playing says, okay, Why isn't this guy playing 35 or 36? But with these rookies especially, they're going to take that cautious approach. Brandon's got a little bit of soreness, but it's nothing I don't think that would prohibit him from playing longer. They're just going to be careful. They're going to be cautious. And they why not? I mean, why not? What's the difference between 23 wins and 33 wins? I'll tell you, it might actually be not having a draft pick. So why push the envelope with a guy? They're still trying to win. They're still, you know, the guys that are out there, they're still trying to win the games. They were playing hard. Taylor Jenkins is trying to, you know, win basketball games. It's just not the utmost, all out, highest priority at this point in time.
Yeah, I mean, and Brandon Clark's been good though. I mean, he clearly hasn't needed the minutes, like the extra minutes, to be really, really effective in the Grizzlies.
He's awesome. Yeah, it's amazing how quickly he's translated. Like, he's so automatic.
Does he look like a third year player? Like, does he not look like a third year player to you?
He does. He almost looks like a finished product, and he's not. He's going to keep getting better, you know. But I mean, if this is his floor, my gosh, like, not saying he's going to be an all star, but he's going to be a really, really solid piece for this team for years to come. I think, you know, we're talking about not making big assumptions out of the gate early on in the season, especially with young players. That's one I feel comfortable making with Brandon Clark, is that provided that he stays healthy, he'll be a piece for the Memphis Grizzlies for a long time.
Very long time. He'll have a long career for sure. I mean, he looks amazing. Like, that's what Isaac would have said on the show today. He looks like a three-year player. I mean, in seven games in, and looks like a, like you mentioned, he looks like a finished product, and he's not, but that's just the way he plays. It's really, really impressive. Let's talk about some of the other guys before we get out of here. Kyle Anderson played really well last night. He obviously played better when he had the ball in his hands, something that, you know, they've really struggled to do with him. Every time he gets it though, he's been aggressive this year. He's scoring the basketball, distributing the basketball. Where are you at on Kyle Anderson? I'm not sure how you feel about him, if you're a Kyle Anderson fan or not.
Underrated storyline is him being healthy and contributing, and the fact that we haven't talked about, you know, his shoulder. So that's a positive. And he's played pretty well. I don't know. I can't tell you how this front office views him long term. He's got a lot of money and 2.5 years left on his contract with a trade kicker. So it's going to make him hard to move if they want to move him. He doesn't necessarily aesthetically fit exactly what they want to do. Aesthetically, he felt like a better fit with what they tried to do last year, but he's still effective. He's still a plus defender. He's still, as we saw against the Timberwolves, pretty good at creating, and even not necessarily pretty. It's effective. So it brings me like comedic relief to like see him out there doing his thing, you know. And it's literally just so unorthodox, so different that, I don't know, you can't help but enjoy it. How the front office feels about him long term, I don't know. But, you know, for this team, he's a versatile piece, kind of exactly what I thought he was going to be, a guy who would do a number of things, facilitate, play in the post, grab rebounds for you if necessary. You know, not a great three-point shooter, and that may still be a product of you know, the shoulder issue. I think he'll have to be a great three-point shooter, but I think he can certainly get some more shots up than he has been now, once things are feeling right for him physically. But yeah, he's been effective so far. I think that's been a pleasant surprise, probably, because if you were reading the tea leaves at the beginning of the training camp, you probably would have been surprised to see him do as much as he's done so far.
You're right. We have come a long way from you and I having a conversation about, is he healthy, to being, yeah, thoroughly pleased the way he's playing. I'd love to see him get more time on some of their star play, you know, on Devin Booker, or I think that he would be capable. I mean, he just usually isn't in there when those guys are in there because he's playing in the, you know, off the bench, but I'd like to see him get more defensive assignments. I think he would be effective there. Last person I want to ask you about, Marco Guderic. Where are you at on him so far this season? I'm at a firm meh.
Okay, well, here's the thing. Sometimes he tries to go ISO, and he doesn't seem to really, fit with exactly what they're trying to do on a given possession once he gets the ball in his hands. But in general, once he cuts a little bit out of the system, I have been pleasantly surprised with his ability to play make. You know, so the sort of assumption on a guy coming from Europe with the three-point percentage that he has is that, you know, he's not really going to be able to put the ball on the floor and do much in terms of playmaking. Well, he's surprised me a little bit with that. He can get to the basket. He's good at finishing in transition. There's been positive elements to that. He's not been off. He has not been able to shoot the ball at a consistent rate, and he hit his 1 3-point attempt last night, and kind of let out this roar, and it was just this sense of relief from him. I'm not ready to give up on Marco yet. I think that he's obviously – going to be susceptible to having some of his minutes stolen at some point by guys like Josh Jackson and De'Anthony Melton. And obviously Grayson Allen is going to come back. You know, but I'm not ready to sell completely. I still think that you got to give a guy who comes from overseas time to acclimate. And so it hasn't been pretty yet, but if the shot starts falling, there's nothing else there for him to at least be a usable player, I think. And, you know, so the shot will come around. Will it come around to the level that it did when he was playing in the EuroLeague last year? And I don't think hardly anybody in the NBA shoots 44% over the course of the season. But if he can even get that up to the mid-30s, I think he's usable. He's a little bit of a defensive liability, but I think the ceiling for him would be, you know, 17, 18 minutes a night, shooting mid-30s percentage-wise from three-point range. And then making some plays for you every now and then off the bounce, and hopefully there's an opposing player who you can stick him on defensively to where he's not going to get burned off the dribble like he did with Eric Gordon the other night.
Yeah, so I am firmly in the man camp, and David, on stock on Markham.
I'm optimistic. I like Markham. Mark and I have like struck up this little bit of a mutual respect where I am talking to him, and we just talk about random stuff for 5 or 10 minutes. And you know, he told me about his upbringing in war torn Yugoslavia, and I got to do a little story on that. So I shouldn't admit it as a beat writer, but I'm kind of pulling for Marco a little bit. But obviously, he's still got a lot to prove.
Absolutely. David, I appreciate it. Again, if you're not already following David on Twitter, David, what's your Twitter handle?
Yeah, David W. Cobb.
That's it. David W. Cobb. If you're not already reading his stuff over the commercial appeal, you guys got great stuff going up all the time. What's up right now for people can read?
Yeah, so, well, by the time you're listening, there will be a mailbag up with some stuff. Obviously, like every other story I write is about John Morant. So if you like John Morant, there's plenty there for you. There's plenty there for you. Eventually, we'll start getting more into some other stuff. It's a long season, but it's Ja mania right now, and rightfully so. So there's plenty of Ja content online.
Yes, David's mailbags where he answers the hard hitters, even about all his pretzels. That made me chuckle that he put that in your mailbags. I appreciate that.
He even made print.
Cool. If he answers my question about the way he likes his pretzels, saw pretzels at the forum, he'll answer your questions, I promise. So get those in. David, I appreciate it. Again, go follow the stuff over there. Again, if you're not already subscribed to the show, make sure you do so. We'll be back tomorrow with a Friday edition of the show.